Because we covered so much material yesterday, I just want to review it to make sure that that it stays with us. And so what I've done is I've printed out a list of all of the different lessons or things to which different parts of the tzitzis are meant to hint and are meant to allude. And what we are supposed to do is we're supposed to fill in which part of the tzitzis hints at the particular thing. So I just want to go around and everyone's going to take one. And tell us very, very quickly which part of the tzitzis hints at that. So, Mr. Amster, what alludes to the 10 spheros?
The ten different knots that we have.
10 knots where?
You have the double knots, right?
The double knots. So that means that in each string there's 10 single knots, which are composed into 5 double knots. Okay, I think that's more what the Mishnah Brura says, that per string, there's 10 single knots. What does the Shulchan Aruch say? Anyone, what does the Shulchan Aruch say?
The front two,
excellent. The front two, if you take the double knots, 5 double knots on the front right, 5 double knots on the front left, so you get 10 for the 10 spheros. Okay, how about 13, Gematria of Echad? What hints at the 13, which is Gematria of Echad? Wait, Mr. Halshender. They're going around. Where's their 13 in the tzitzis? Wait.
The last one.
No. Lifeline, sorry.
More than one.
Wait. 13? What hints of... Okay, I see you now. 13? The last of the Cholyos. It's wrapped 7... 7, 8, 11, 13. So the 13 loops. Okay, what's the other answer?
5 knots and 8 chutim.
5 knots and 8 chutim, excellent. What about 26, the gematria of Yudke Vavke? What in the tzitzis hints at 26? Here you're going to need some addition. It's not a single thing, but it's a combination of things.
The 7, 8, what do you call it?
And 11. Excellent. The first three of the cholyos, the first three sets of loops, the sum of loops is 26, which is the gematria of Yudke Vavke, followed by the 13, right, which is Echad, for a total of Hashem Echad. So tzitzis in gematria spell out Hashem Echad. What else hints at the 26, the gematria of Yudke Vavke? Mr. Ben Chaviv, this is the Sfardi tzitzis.
Right,
the Sfardim have 26 whole loops in the total sum of their kolios. They have 10, and then they have 5, and then they have 6, and then they have 5, for a total of 26. Each set of loops is the gematria of one of the letters of Yudke Vavke. What hints, and here it's not something in the structure of the tzitzis that hints at this, but chol, which is the all-encompassing nature of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the oneness. Right? What hints at that in the tzitzis? And anyone who didn't hear Mr. Amster? Herb. Okay, see if I'm comfortable with it. Okay, so we have the Techeles, which has the word kol, right? Kol inside of it. What about the gematria of Echad? We did that already for a total of Hashem Echad. The gematria of... the letters of Yud Kei Vav Kei, we got that also. The gematria of Hashem's name, Hey Vav, Ani Vaho Hoshiana. Where do we have the gematria of Hey Vav? Hey Vav?
7 and 8.
Hey Vav is 11. 7 and 8 is 15.
No, 8. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
7 and 8. Wait a minute.
Vav Hei?
Vav Hei is 12.
Vav
Hei
is 11.
Vav would be 12. Yeah. Where do you have Hei Vav? Where is there an 11 somewhere in the tzitzis?
The one of the 11?
11 loops, right? 11 loops. That's a third of the loops, according to the Ashkenazim, is 11. And so we've got that, the gematria of Hei Vav. The gematria of Hashem's name, Tes Lamed, right? Which is also the first two letters of Talis. And where do we find that alluded to in the tzitzis?
39.
39 where? Where's 39 in the tzitzis? the sum of all of the loops together, 7, right, 7, 8, 11, 13, not if you do 7, 9, 11, 13, but 7, 8, 11, 13, or, right, in the Gemara says no more than 13 sets of loops, 3 loops each, so you end up with 39. What about the gematria of Hashem's name composed of letters immediately following the letters of Yud Kei Vav Kei, which is Kaf Vav Zayin Vav? And where is that hinted at in the Tzitzis? What's the sum of Kaf Vav Zayin Vav? 39. Okay, so it's the same as previously, the sum of the Ashkenazi Cholyos, or the sum of the 13 Cholyos times 3 in the times of the Gemara. What about hints at the mitzvos? Where's the remez to the 5 Chumashim? Five Chumashim. Five Gnats. Okay, where's the remez to the 613 mitzvos?
Tzitzis. Oros.
Oros.
And the 8 and 5.
Tzitzis, right?
With both yuds,
right? Plus 8 strings and 5 gnats. Excellent, right? Or right, orot, tal, orot, right? And what? There's a third gematria also. Oros, that's the second one, and then there's a third word also. Rav Moshe Adarshan said, "Al kanfei nisharim." I didn't even get that one yesterday. Somebody told me Nisharim, right, is also a big gematria.
600,
right, again, plus. Excellent. So here we've got a bunch of redemption, things that the Tzitzis remind us of redemption. The four verbs, Votsesi, Vitsalti, Vilakachti, Vigaalti. What in the Tzitzis alludes to those four? Four corners. Excellent. The 8 days from redemption until Shiras Hayam, where is 8 in Tzitzis?
8 strings,
excellent. The 8 strings of the Messianic harp, well, that's going to be the same 8 strings. The gematria of Moshe Rabbeinu's word Az, Aleph Zayin, Gamkein, right, 8, okay, lots of 8s. What about the hint at the Kanfei Nisharim, the eagle's wings, that Ki'ilu Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim on eagle's wings? Al kanfei vigdehem, right? The corner, like this, there's a synonym, right? The corner of the garment and the wing, they have the same word in Hebrew, it's a homonym. So you got kanfei nisharim. What about the shichul bechorot, right? The makas bechoros? From the word techeles, the tough and the shin, right, are interchangeable. What about nature? What do we have? 7 heavens. What hints at the 7 heavens?
Seven times around.
The 7 loops of the first Cholya, or, and what did the Gemara say?
The 7 Rakiyas.
Well, that's the 7, those are the 7 Rakiyas, but what in the Tzitzis, aside from the 7 loops in the first Cholya, hint at that? 7 Cholyas, meaning if you're making groups of 3 with Techeles, the Gemara says you should have no fewer, ideally, than 7 groups of 3 to hint at the 7 heavens. What about the 7 spaces between the 8 heavens? That's a Levush, and that could be only one of the 2 previous ones. Right, the Levush is not arguing on the Gemara. The Gemara says that if you're going to be making Cholyos with Techeles, you're supposed to make 7 groups of 3. But since we don't have Techeles, we are not going to hint at those 7 heavens of the Gemara, because you would need Techeles to do that. So the Levush says that the 7 loops that we do in the first Cholya, those don't hint at the 7 heavens per se. You would need blue for that, but those may hint at the 7 spaces between the 8 heavens if you calculate the number of heavens differently, if you have a different criterion for determining what counts as a heaven. Someone told me that there was one time in the couple of decades ago that there was too much crime going on in the subways, too many grand felonies or something, which is defined as like robberies of valuables that are more than $500. So the police department, in order to crack down on it, the 7 or 8 or 9 or perhaps even more heavens if you do the astronomy differently. So the Gemara counts 7 heavens, for the seven orbits of the planets. And then the Lavush says, no, there's eight, because you also have to count outer space where there are stars, right? The planets and the stars look very similar to one another from Earth without the telescope. And so you've got the moving stars and you've got the stationary stars, and presumably the moving stars each have their own heaven, but the stationary stars also might have a heaven, the constellation. So he counts eight heavens. So, and what about the seven moving stars plus one constellation heaven plus one empty heaven, which is devoid of any stars? So what's that meant to symbolize?
The Arizal
says 9. The Shulchan Aruch says 9, the Arizal says 8.
Oh, okay.
Right, so it's to symbolize, the Shulchan Aruch says that the second set of loops, right, 2 out of 4, the second of 4 has 9, not just 8. Right, for the Shulchan Aruch, there's a total of 40, not 39, of 40 loops in all the Chol Yos together. So the Lavush says that the seven moving stars plus one, you've got 9 heavens if you define a heaven a little bit differently. What about, okay, the seven moving stars we got already as well. That's probably or maybe the same thing as the Gemara when it said the seven heavens. What about the seven heavens plus the 6 spaces in between?
The 13
Chol Yos
in the Gemara.
The 13 Chol Yos, 13 groups of 3 loops, right? Or knots? Meaning that if you have, you would have 14, you would have 14 knots if you have 13 groups of loops. Right? But it's either the 13, right, in the last Chol Yos that we have, or it's the 13 Chol Yos of the Gemara. The 8 spaces between the 9 heavens, again, we've seen already, 8, where is there 8?
The that's for the Arizal.
For the Arizal, the second set of Chol Yos according to the Arizal, and finally, the 11 constellations mentioned in Tanakh. Again, we're having all these numbers repeating. Where did we have 11? It should be like 1, 2, 3, Mechudadim Beficha. Where's 11?
Third
Chol Yos. Yeah, but I'm hearing the same people every time. Okay, I have to go through this again tomorrow. Then everyone should. And finally, what in the Tzitzis hints at the source of souls, the Nafshos Tzadikim, which are Genuzim underneath the Kisei Hakavod? Right. What hints at that in the Tzitzis? Tcheles, thank you, excellent, the Tcheles, right, because the Kisei HaKavod, right, is blue, Tachas Raglav, Kamasei, Livnat HaSapir, blue like a sapphire. And the same thing elsewhere also in Yechezkel, in the Maisim Rekava, it's described the Kisei HaKavod as Kamasei Evan Sapir, the Mus Kisei. So the Kisei HaKavod is blue, and the Neshamos are stored in the Kisei HaKavod, and so the blue of the Tzitzis, in addition to alluding to the Kisei HaKavod itself, the Sefer HaChinuch says it also alludes to the Neshamos. Excellent. What about the fact that the soul controls the body? Tcheles wrapped around the white, where the white represents the body. He says it comes offer min ha'adama, and the offer is like shaleg, and that's the Sefer HaChinuch. And finally, right, the very difficult to understand Levush, the 13 points of a cube's line, but without even having to understand them, where do we see 13 in the Tzitzis? Last Chol Yos, once again, okay, there's a lot of repetition here, but we have basically the 4 or 5 base categories, and we have the basic features, right, of the Tzitzis, which allude to the different different items on this list. Don't put the paper away. There is a chart on the second side, which we'll get to either today or hopefully at the very least tomorrow, but now we're basically ready to start the next sugya. Thank you very much, Rav Shlomo. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Shehakol Nehiyah B'Dvaro. Do we have enough Gemaras for everyone, by the way?
Yeah, plenty.
Okay, okay, excellent. So we're on the bottom of Lamed Tes Amud Aleph, second line from the bottom. Hahu Gavra. What's a Gavra? Gavra?
Man.
Right, Gever. Right, Gvarim. Right, the Gavra. So there was that man. The Michsi, like a Kisus, Michase, Kisui. Covered. Right? He was covered. He was wearing glima, which is a coat or a shirt or a garment. Dekula techelta. That was all techeles. Viramile techelta. And he also had thrown techeles right on it. In other words, he had put tzitzis on his solid blue garment. Ugedila migdio. And it was braided from top to bottom. In other words, that his tzitzis, right, was composed entirely of cholyos without any loose strings. It was only a gedil, and there was no pasil. And this man with this unique talis walked by.
Korach's question,
exactly. Talis shekula tchiles, right? But here, right, unlike Korach, right, he put tzitzis on it, right? But the tzitzis were kulo gedilim. It was all braids, all loops, and no loose strings at all. So when he passed by, he came to shul, and there were two rabbis davening in shul, and his clothing, his attire, sparked a debate between the two rabbis. Everyone seems to agree that the talis was very handsome. So Rav says, Amar Rav, Ya'i glima, this is a glima na'a. It's beautiful. It's nice. But, V'lo ya'i techelta. The techeles, the tzitzis, again, this is one of the instances where tzitzis, right, is referred to as techeles, because the techeles is, right, the most important, right, or the most expensive or rare part of the tzitzis. But, lo ya'i techelta. The tzitzis are not beautiful, because the beauty of the tzitzis stems from their utility, from their fulfillment of the mitzvah, and if the tzitzis are incapable of satisfying the mitzvah requirement, so then they're just a masoi, they're just a weight, they're not essentially an enhancement. And this happens to be very important in the Shabbos discussion that we had 2 weeks ago, right? That the tzitzis are not considered to be inherently something which adorn and enhance the appearance of a garment, right? They only enhance the appearance of the garment in as much as they fulfill the mitzvah. And therefore, the garment may be handsome, right? But the tzitzis, right, which are devoid, shorn of their utility, are not na'im. So that was Rav's opinion. But Rabba Bar Bar Chana said, Ya'i glima, the garment is beautiful, and Ya'i techelta, the tcheles, the tzitzis, is also beautiful. So the Gemara now wants to know, Bimai ka miflagi, plag, right, like plag amincha means a split. So what is it that splits them? What is it, right? What is it that contributes or that informs their argument? If it's an argument in halacha, it must be based on reading of psukim, or it must be based on different positions in logic. And so the Gemara is asking, what is the source, right, for each of these two opinions? Very often you'll see this rabbi says this, that rabbi says this. Why? Right, why? So the Gemara is asking why. B'mai kamiflagi, what is it, right, that splits them? What is it that informs their dispute? And the Gemara explains, Rabba Bar Bar Chana Savar, Rabba Bar Bar Chana holds, Ksiv, that it says in the Pasuk, Katuv, it's written, Gedil, that tzitzis should be a braid, Uksiv, and it's also written, that tzitzis should be a pasil, that it should be a, right, so therefore, O Gedil, it can either be a braid, O pasil, or it can be loose strings. In this case, right, it wasn't, there were no loose strings, but it was a braid, so it's either a gedil or a pasil. This was a gedil, so therefore it fulfills the mitzvah.
It's kosher.
It's kosher. That's Rabba Bar Bar Chana. We don't pass it like Rabba Bar Bar Chana, but that's what he held. Oh, gedil, right? Oh, pasil, this was a gedil, therefore it's kosher. So what about Rav? Rav said that it was not kosher. So how does he deal with these psukim? Right, the psukim do say either gedil or pasil. Right, I mean, there's one pasuk that says tzitzis should be a gedil, another one that says that tzitzis should be a pasil. And so, isn't the logical interpretation of that you could have either or? So Rav says no. Le'olam pasil ba'inan. You always need a pasil. A gedil is not enough. This guy had just the gedil and not a pasil. No, you need a pasil in addition to the gedil. But where do we get this from? And what does he do with the fact that it says gedil and it says pasil? He says, "Hahi gedilim." That word gedilim is not teaching us that gedil is an acceptable alternative, a replacement for the pasil, but rather it's teaching us the following, that gedil means shnayim, a braid can't be with less than two, And gedilim, the plural, braids, need at least four strings. One braid needs at least two strings, and so two braids need at least four strings. So that teaches us that tzitzis need to have at least four strings. Gedil, gedilim, gedil is shnayim, and gedilim is arba'a. And here there's a little bit, if you look, you see there's a star, and the star in most gemaras take you right to the margin, either on the left or on the right. In our case, it's the margin on the left. Now it's difficult to discern what's going on in the left margin because there are three marginal comments over here. So you have to read through each of them and see which one fits best into the Gemara here. Well, the first one is in brackets and it tells us Yivamos Heyom Abeis. That's probably not changing the girsa of the Gemara. That's probably just giving a cross reference of someplace else where this particular line is to be found. The second one is Pesil Asay. Now, if you look, the word after the star is Asay. So it could be that what the marginal note is doing is it's telling me that the word Pesil belongs before the word Asay. Right? We have Gedil Shnayim Gedilim Arba, and then the Gemara jumps immediately to Asay Gedil Upotzleu Mitocho. And the margin may be telling me that I should put the word Pesil first so that the entire line should read Gedil Shnayim Gedilim Arba, semicolon. Pesil, asay gedil uposleu mitocho. Okay, what's the difference? Keep in mind the structure of the Gemara is that the Gemara will quote a pasuk, and then it will interpret the pasuk. It'll say what the midrash is on the pasuk. So the pasuk that was quoted, gedil, those are four out of six letters, in the word gedilim, and so that was the first quote. And the drasha, the medrash on that is shnayim. Then the next word, gedilim, that's the full word with all six of its letters. Again, it's a quote from the Chumash. And then the medrash is arba. Then the Gemara goes on and says, asay gedil upotleu mitocho. That sounds like it's just continuing to be the medrash of the word gedilim, because there is no word that's juxtaposed in between the arba and the asay. So it seems to me that it's all the medrash of the word gedilim. However, if you take the marginal note, so then there's not just two words from which we're making a medrash, but rather there are three words. There's gedil, there's the yud mem of gedilim, and then there's pesil. What's the medrash of pesil? It's to teach me that I say gedil, that I'm supposed to make a braid, yes, but potleu mitocho, that which means one of three things, either that there must be loose strings coming out of the gedil, that there should be petilim, potleu is the verb form of pesil, make psilim come out from the middle of it. Right? Or, Rashi says, a different interpretation might mean that potleu mitocho, that when you're going to make one string distinct from the other strings, that one string shouldn't be an additional string, but rather it should be one of the eight strings, one of the four strings that are already there. It should be mitocho, not mihutzalo, from the outside, from the chutz, but rather from the toch, from the inside. Now, these two interpretations of Rashi, either that it means you're supposed to have strings, or that it means that the winding string, the string that you wind around the others, is supposed to be one of the eight rather than a ninth, or one of the four rather than a fifth, that one of them may work better with one of the girsas, one of them may work better with the other girsas. I don't want to go into that right now. But right now I think we're going to use the marginal version, that there are three different words that we're making a medrash from. Gedil is shnayim, gedilim is arba, and pesil is asay gedil upotleu mitocho. I think that fits very well with the words of the Gemara, because otherwise, where do you get from the word gedilim to the fact that you're supposed to be posleu mitocho? Where do you get that from? It would seem that gedilim teach me that you need an additional two strings. In addition to the initial two, you need four strings. So where do you see from the word gedilim that you're supposed to be potel mitocho? That if you're counting the strings, you're supposed to count the string that's winding, the string that's looping, as one of the four rather than adding on a fifth one. So I think that...
And gedil is two and gedilim is four.
Right.
So why they say plural? Lushn Rabban. Gedilim, four. But gedil is two is also lushn rabban. What did you say singular?
Right, so Gedil is two, and Gedilim is two times two.
Gedil itself means braided. Means a Gedil is not one string. By definition, a Gedil needs to be braided. Two. And Gedilim means minimum of two Gedilim. Exactly.
Plural
of Gedil.
But only singular is one.
No, but singular is not one. The Gedil itself is already two.
But it's two. There's also Lusha Rabim. Two is not
Lusha Rabim. Gedil means braided.
A single braid has two strings. A braid, right, the word braid means at least...
It's singular, but it's the two.
Yes.
That's what it is. That's why I don't know.
Yeah.
Singular.
Mm-hmm.
That means it's
like a pair.
One, it's a one, the two is a one.
Exactly. Like in English, the word pair,
yeah.
Right?
P-A-I-R,
pair, right? It means two, right? But it's singular. One pair means two.
Now I understand.
Okay,
the
excellent.
Gedil is two, but it's singular. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so that's what we're going to work with now. We're going to work with that there's three different words from which we make a medrash. Okay. Now, let's take a step back for a second and a quick lesson on midrashim in general. Right? Very often we start out with what many achronim call a svara chitzona or a svara mibachutz, an outside logic. And that means what I would have thought before the Gemara told me which midrash it told me. What would I have thought in the absence of the Torah, or in the absence of a particular word or pasuk in the Torah? That's what's called a svara chitzona, the outside, outside the Torah, outside the Beis Medrash. If I didn't come in to shiur today, that's what I would have thought. Then, there's a pasuk. The pasuk, right, is designed to transform, or to overturn, the svara chitzona, and then what we end up with is a svara chadasha. I just made up that term. Achronim don't call it that. You could call it a svara panimis, an inside svara, the svara that you get when you come inside the Beis Medrash, when you enter right into the circle, right, which is the perimeter of the Torah. So there's a svara chitzona. Then the pasuk brings us from the outside to the inside, and we arrive at a new svara with the assistance of the Torah and the midos shatorah nidrashes bahen. If you apply this methodology to the Gemara that we just read, what is the Svara Chitzona of the Gemara? And I'm going to read you the relevant line again. Let's all concentrate on this line and try to figure out what is the Svara Chitzona, right? What is the Pasuk, and then what's the new Svara? The Gemara says, it's explaining the reasoning of Rabba Bar Bar Chana, and he says, right, Ksiv Gedil, Uksiv Pesil. Which part of these three is that line telling us? Ksiv Gedil, it's written Gedil, and Ksiv Pesil, Pesil is written. Right, which of these three, right, is the Gemara identifying, or which of these three is the Gemara saying in that line? The Pasuk. Okay, so we have the Pasuk here. We have Gedil and Pesil. Okay, so we still have to figure out what is the Svara Chitzona. What's the next line, says the Gemara? O Gedil, O Pesil. So which of the three is that? O Gedil, O Pesil. It says Gedil, it says Pesil. That teaches me that you could have either a Gedil or a Pesil. That's the inside Svara, right? So the either or... So now, that's the end of Rabba Bar Bar Chana. So the Gemara tells us the Pasuk, and it tells us the inside Svara. Can we figure out, can we infer from the Gemara what was the Svara Chitzona? If it hadn't said Gedil and Pesil, what would I have thought?
One is kosher
is what we have after the Medrash. Right, that's either or. Meaning either one, right? Right. So that's what I thought also, that the Svara Chitzona would be that you need both. Okay. So this is very interesting. So if it hadn't said Gedil and Pesil, what would it have said? Meaning what's the alternative? If the Torah had left out something, if it hadn't written it the way that it wrote it, If the Torah left out both words, you're telling me, if the Torah left out both words and it had only said tzitzis, so then I would have thought, no, but either or, you need this gedil pasil, bifurcation, to teach me either or. The implication is that without that pasuk, I would not have thought either or, but I would have thought that you need both. Right? So what is it that in the absence of Mr.
If they were in the same pasuk,
you
need both.
So that. Okay, so you're almost giving away my punchline, but not quite. So I thank you for that. So we have, if the pasuk had just said tzitzis, Mr. Amster says, what's your name again?
Menachem.
If Menachem says, if you had gedil and psil in the same pasuk, right? So then I would have thought that you need both. Right, and now that the fact that the pasuk split them, gedil and psil separately, that tells me that it's either or. Exactly.
One is enough.
Okay, one second. So let's just analyze this for a second. When the Gemara says k'siv gedil u'k'siv psil, does that sound like the Gemara is focusing our attention on the fact that they appear in separate psukim? Or is the Gemara focusing our attention on the fact that they appear, period? The language, ksiv gedil, ksiv pasil, what about these words is the Gemara focusing our attention on? That they appear. So that's not exactly what Rav Menachem is saying. Right? Okay, so that's why I said it's not exactly my punchline, right? Because what I'm going to do is I'm going to have to contend, right, with this question. Okay. So I would have thought if it just said tzitzis that you need both. Now, let's take a look for a second and we'll look at Rav. Remember, this is all Rav Bar Bar Chana. The Svar Chitzona is that I need both. The fact that it says gedil and psil, that teaches me a new Svara that either or is okay. So Rav, when he is going to argue with Rav Bar Bar Chana, needs to provide an alternate interpretation of this drasha. Right, it says gedil, and it says psil. So if Rabbi Bar Bar Chana says this must teach us either or, so Rav needs an alternate interpretation of the drasha so that it's not available to teach me the either or of Rabbi Bar Bar Chana. So we're dealing, right, with the same pasuk, right? But Rav has an alternate interpretation of this pasuk. What is Rav's alternate interpretation? Well, there's two words, right? There's gedil and there's psil. So, we had three midrashim from these two words, or two midrashim, and then one medrash from something else, right? The gedil teaches me what? Right? The gedil says two strings. And Gedilim teaches me two more strings. But did Rabbi Bar Bar Chana actually talk about Gedilim? No, he didn't. So I'm not really sure why Rab is bringing this down, right? Other than because it just goes together with the drasha from Gedil. And what about Pasil? According to our to the Gilyon, to the marginal note that we were reading it with, what does that teach me? Pasil? Asei gedil uposleu mitocho, right? Which means, right, either that you need loose strings, right? Which pretty much either that you need loose strings, or Rashi said that the shamish string, right, is supposed to be one of the eight. You don't add on a ninth or a fifth for the shamish, right? But the shamish is one of eight. Now, I want to just address for just a second this possibility that Rashi mentions, because I'm not going to be working with this possibility that the idea of asei gedil uposleu mitocho, means that there must be loose strings that emerge from the gedil. And I'll tell you why I'm not going to be working with it. Working backwards, we have a pasuk, right? The pasuk is pasil. And we have the svara chadasha, right, which is that you need loose strings to emerge from the gedil. What was the svara chitzona? According to this interpretation of Rashi, right, that the word pasil teaches me that I need loose strings to emerge from the gedil. So what was the svara chitzona?
It is part of
you would know that without the pasuk.
Now, what was the svara chitzona? If the inside, the new svara, is that I must have loose strings emerging from the gedil, so the svara chitzona is that I don't, right? So that would be lichora. It's not necessarily either or, right? But the svara chitzona is that the braid is sufficient. It's only one step from there to the either or, right? If the braid is sufficient, why shouldn't the loose strings alone, you know, be sufficient too, right? But so that would be a little bit strange, right? That they have the opposite svara chitzonas. They have the opposite svara chitzonas, right? Rabbi Bar Bar Chana says that svara, if I didn't come to shiur today, I would have thought that you need both. But the pasuk then tells me I can have either or. And Rav says, if I hadn't come to shiur, I would have thought that it's either or. And then the pasuk tells me that I need both. Well, one second. Right, what's going on here? What does the pasuk tell me? Is the pasuk so fluid? Is the pasuk so flexible? Right, is it so ambiguous that it can teach me two opposite halachos? Right, it's either teaching me either or it's teaching me that I need both. That's a little bit difficult. Right, to say we try when there's a machlokas amongst Amoraim, right, we're not going to say that they have diametrically opposite readings of the pasuk, right? That, you know, they have opposite svarah chitzonas, diametrically opposite, and then diametrically opposite readings of the pasuk. Let me just ask you a question. If you just had these words gedil and psil, what would you say they meant?
Both.
That you need both. And I would have said that also, that gedil and psil mean that you need both, right? So if anything, right, that seems to be Rav and the svara chitzona that Rashi attributes to Rav, that the svara chitzona is that either or are enough, or at least that the braid alone is enough. And then when it says gedil and psil, that tells me that it's not enough just to have a gedil, but I also need a psil, right? Like Rashi says, and that's a very logical reading. That if the pasuk had only said gedil, I would have thought that a gedil was enough, right? And then the pasuk came and said psil also. It tells me that I also need a psil. So that makes it very difficult for Rabbi Bar Bar Chana. Now, what's he thinking, that the svara chitzona is that you need both, and that the pasuk is telling me the exact opposite? It's a little bit strange. If you didn't have gedil and pasil, so where would you have known, right? Meaning you only know that you need both from the fact that it says gedil and psil, right? So let me tell you what I was thinking along the lines that Menachem said. There's two interesting pairs of mitzvos in the Torah. One of them is the pair of yibum and chalitza. It is impossible, right, for a person to do both yibum and chalitza. Either one has to do yibum, or one can do chalitza. We paskin that yibum is ideal, chalitza is only second best, but we do chalitza anyhow nowadays for reasons that we discussed in a different context. How do we know that? Because the pasuk says, "Im lo yachpotza ish lekachat et yivimto," if he doesn't want to do yibum, so then ve'alsa yivimto ashara alazakinim, then she should go and say me'en yivami, he doesn't want to do it, and they'll do chalitza. That's one pair of mitzvos. It's either or, and there's a hierarchy, right, that the ideal is yibum, and the second, now it's worth noting, there is one opinion that says, we don't pask in this way, but there is an opinion that says that yibum and chalitza are equal mitzvos. In other words, that a woman who's in that situation can choose, right, or the man really, right, the brother of the deceased childless man, can choose to do either yibum or chalitza, and that both of them are equal, just the Torah says, you can't do both, right, but do one or the other. Can anyone think of another mitzvah that is another pair of mitzvos that resemble yibum and chalitza? Scan your databases of Taryag mitzvos, of Chumash. Is there another mitzvah that is similar to mitzvos, but it's impossible to fulfill both of them in a single instance, but rather the Torah gives you an option of either this mitzvah or of that mitzvah? Gittin and Kiddushin. It's not that there's a single instance that demands either get or Kiddushin. I can fulfill matzah on Pesach and Arba Minim on Sukkot, but I can't do Arba Minim on Pesach or matzah on Sukkot, but that's not the same as Yibam and Chalitza, because there isn't a single instance where I have a choice between one or the other. I'm looking for a circumstance which demands, right, one of two mitzvos, but not both. By karbanos, interesting, right? There's a karban olev yored, which says if you're very wealthy, you bring an animal. If you're a little less wealthy, you bring a bird. A little less wealthy than that, you bring flour, right? But you can't bring more than one. It's either an animal or a bird, right? Or flour. Excellent. So that's another instance where you have a choice, right? One of three
but
separate things.
But it's a reward, as far as the reward is concerned. That you get more when you bring flour or you bring animal, maybe you get a bigger reward.
The Mishnah Menachos says that you get the same reward for all of them.
Reward.
As long as you're not pinching pennies when it comes to buying your carbon.
It's also the same reward.
It's not a choice.
Probably. Yes.
You ask it for something like Yibam and Chalitza. Korbanot is not like Yibam. It depends on your monetary status. If you have a high IRS return, then you have to give at the top. If you have the middle, then the middle. You're in a bracket of a monetary thing. It's not a choice.
Okay, one second. We have a challenge now. It's not a choice. If you're rich, then you can only bring this. If you're middle class, you can only bring that. If you're...
Yibam and Chalitza, you want to, you do. If you don't want to, you don't do.
Very good. It's also
a yeah, that's how we pass
so
there
it. Is there a different reward?
Yeah. When I after 120, I'll ask a Kaddish Baruch Hu. There's a lot of things that we don't know about reward. You know, mitzvah gedola keketana hizaru. You have to be careful. Okay, so let me tell you what I was thinking of. I was thinking of the mitzvah of Pidyon Peter Chamor and Arifa. Right, where you have a single instance, right, where you have a choice to either redeem the Chamor by giving a sheep to the Kohen, right, or if you choose not to, so then you have to do the Arifa, right, of the Peter Chamor, a ceremony similar but not exactly the same as bringing it as a carbon, and that's the Arifa of the Peter Chamor. So again, you have these two instances where the Torah gives a pair of mitzvos and says choose one or the other. Now, what I would suggest is that that's what's happening in our Gemara also. That there's the fact that it says Gedil, right, and Pesil. What the Gemara is offering us is the choice of either a Gedil or of a Pesil. Just like it offers us a choice of either Yibum or Chalitza, right, or just like it offers us a choice of either Pidyon Peter Chamar or Arifa. So by saying Gedil and Pesil, it's telling us you have a choice of either a Gedil, right, or a Pesil, although, right, there is no implied hierarchy between them. Now, perhaps some of what informs that, right, is the fact that they're split up into two separate parashios, but fundamentally, right, it's the fact that you have these two different descriptions of what tzitzis are and what tzitzis should look like, which gives us the license to choose either the gedil, right, or the pasil. What would the svara chitzona be? So here I would make a slight modification. Initially, everyone said the svara chitzona is that I need both the gedil and the pasil. And that would be because it said tzitzis, which means tzitzis like we have. I would say that maybe the svara chitzona is more like this. If the Torah had only said gedil, I would have thought that you must have a gedil. If the Torah had only said pasil, I would have thought that you must have a pasil. But now that the Torah said gedil and the Torah said pasil, so then it tells me that I can either have a gedil or a pasil. So in other words, the alternative, right, to the pasuk, right, is not just tzitzis without either of these words, but if there were only one of the two, I would have thought that that one is absolutely necessary. But now that the Torah wrote the second one, right, it's to give us an option. Just like if the Torah had only written Yibum, I would have thought that Yibum must be performed. There is no option of Chalitza. If the Torah had only written Pidyon Petra Hamar, I would have thought that the Pidyon must be performed. There is no option of Arifa. The Torah came along and wrote Chalitza. It came along and wrote Arifa. And it came along and wrote, right, Pasil or Gedil, whichever one is the second one. And that's what teaches me either or. That, I think, is a svara of Rabba Bar Bar Chana.
Why can we compare it to Lavan and Chelet? You don't need Chelet. If you don't have Chelet, you don't need it. Lavan is enough. Why can you make it Zerah Shav on that? With the Gdilim and the Ptil?
It all has to do with how to interpret the Psukim.
Like Rabba Bar Bar Chana says, so you need Chelet and you need Lavan, or you don't. So if you don't need Chelet and Lavan, so Gdil or Ptil would be also one or the other.
But it's all how we make drashos on the psukim, meaning whether the tchelis is ma'akev the lavan or not, the Gemara says, depends on how you interpret the words uri'item oto. Is oto saying that all of tzitzis is a singular, right, simple entity such that when you're missing one of its parts, the entire thing becomes invalid? Right? Or is oto referring independently to the tcheles, from which we can infer, right, that you see the tcheles and it helps with something, and the tcheles alone is independent, and presumably the lavan alone is independent as well. It's the interpretation of the word oto which informs that debate about whether or not the tcheles and the lavan are codependent. Over here, right, when we're talking about the gedil and the psil, so the word oto is not going to be so helpful to us. Oto only appears in connection, right, with the petil, not with the gedil, right? And even there it appears in a slightly different context. And here the Gemara is identifying, right, that the critical literary device that we need to focus on, right, is the fact that tzitzis are described as gedil in one parsha and as pasil in a different parsha. How do we harmonize these two divergent descriptions of tzitzis? That's what the Gemara identifies as being, you know, the key literary device whose interpretation, right, will yield, right, one of these two conclusions.
Why can't you say that the lavan and chelet is oto, meaning the tzitzit? They're both made out of the same material.
That's what Rabbi Yehuda says.
Because it's a different color, it should say otam.
That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. But if there's four strings, then the proper way to refer to it is plural. Right, or if there's two different things.
But it's one. Because it happens to be a different color, doesn't make it a different animal.
So Rabbi Yehuda says, yeah, that blue is one thing and the white is something else. There's hakanaf min kanaf. The Torah itself alluded to that. Hakanaf is min kanaf, is the white. And then the psil techeles is the blue. So the Torah listed the white and the blue separately. And then it said uritem oto, right, which sounds like now it's combining them into one. That's Rabbi Yehuda's drasha. But again, it's a totally different medrash than we have over here. We're analyzing a different aspect, a different facet of the parasha of tzitzis to determine whether or not gedil and psil are codependent. It's a different part of the parasha that informs this discussion than the one which informs that discussion. And there's no need to be consistent. Right? That's, we saw Rabbi Yishmael. We passed in against Rabbi Yishmael. We say that all four, right, are single mitzvah. The four, the left, the right, the front, the back. Right, you need to have tzitzis on all four corners. So we don't say that they're each one and is an independent mitzvah. But at the same time, right, we do say that the tcheles and the lavan are not ma'akiv one another because they're dependent on on two different sources. I want to just finish this line of thought, and then if there's time left, we'll leave that for questions. So I'm arguing that Rabbi Bar Bar Chana says that the Svarah Chitzona is, if it had only said Gedil, then I would have thought you must have a Gedil. If it had only said Pesil, I would have thought you must have a Pesil. Now that the Torah wrote both, it's telling me either or, just like Yibum Chalitza, and just like Pidyon Petr Chamor and Arifa. How does Rav address this? Rav brings these midrashim, right? He says, well, you know, you need gedilim to teach me that there's four strings, and you need pesil to tell me, I say pesil upotleu mitocho, that the shamish is one of the eight rather than a ninth. And so that, does that really take away the drasha of Rabba Bar Bar Chana? Rabba Bar Bar Chana says, in one parsha it's a gedil, the other parsha it's a pesil. So presumably, you could have either or. But Rabba Bar Bar Chana now, the way I'm explaining it, is not using like an extra word. Like very often the Gemara will say, well, if it had written, the Pasuk had been written more tersely, I would have thought one thing. Now that the Pasuk uses an extra word or an unusual word, it's to teach me the new halacha. But we're saying that this drasha, this medrash, is not from an extra word or from an unusual word, right? It's simply from the fact, right, that the tzitzis are described in two different ways, and so it's not as if you can knock it off by saying, oh, I have a medrash that gedil, right, means two, and gedilim means four, and psil means posleu mitocho. How does that take away, right, the fact that that it says both gedil, right, and psil? So this, I'm not sure, this may be correct, right, but I'll tell you what I was thinking. The fundamental. Well, that's how Rashi understands it,
yeah.
Right? So Rashi would say that the Svarah Chitzona is that one is sufficient, and that the Gedil is saying no, you need this
that's
and
one mitzvah,
right. But where do you get that from? Why is Rav quoting the first drasha also that Gedilim teaches me the eight strings? So let me tell you what I'm thinking. I'm thinking as follows. There's a conceptual issue that's at stake here. And that issue is, to what extent are the parshios complementary, that each one informs us of something, right, that the other one doesn't, but even though they appear in two separate areas of the Torah, they're really all a single parsha and they should be read together. Or to what extent do we say that no, that they're two distinct parshios? One of them is like the parasha of Yibum, the other one is like the parasha of Chalitza, right? Two separate, distinct parashios, even though Yibum and Chalitza are actually in the same parasha, right? But they're basically two separate mitzvahs, and then you could have two separate units, one on each of them, right? To what extent do we say that they're independent of one another? And to what extent do we say that even though they appear in different places in the Torah, they're meant to be read together, to be analyzed together, and to be applied together? So Rabbi Bar Bar Chana is taking the separatist approach. He's saying the very fact that there are two parshios and two words to describe the tzitzis, right, that proves to us that there are two different options, two different paths to travel, and that each one is independent of the other. I think that Rav is bringing these two midrashim to prove to us that it's not so. When we talk about gedilim, which tells me eight strings, does that mean, says Rav, that you can have eight strings in the braid, but then fewer than eight strings after the braid? Can you have eight strings in the braid, but then only one in the, right, in the psil, in the loose strings? It seems like the Gemara's understanding, right, that we're learning out from the word gedilim, that you must have eight loose strings as well. And from the word pesilim, I say p'dil uposleu mitocho, that the shamish, the string that you wrap around the other seven, is one of the eight. So from the word pesil, posleu mitocho, from the word pesil, we learn out a halacha of the gedil. So from the word gedilim, we're learning out a halacha that applies not only to the braids, but also to the loose strings. And from the word pesil, we're learning out a halacha that applies not to the loose strings, but to the braid. So Rav is saying this medrash, or these midrashim, are evidence that the parshios are not meant to be read as independent of one another, but they're meant to complement one another. And so, the idea is that it's not so much that there's a svara chitzona, right, that if it hadn't written, right, these two psukim, so then I would have thought that a braid is sufficient. I don't think that's what the svara chitzona is at all. I think that Rav is emphasizing, right, that it's the psukim themselves, right, the midrashim, right, of the psukim, are telling us that the parasha of Gedilim Ta'aselach and the parasha of V'nasata Al Tzitzis HaKanaf P'sil T'cheles are really meant to be read, analyzed, and applied together. Each one sheds light on the other, and therefore you cannot read the fact that there are two locations, right, and two nouns that are used to describe them. You can't read that as being either this one or that one, like Ibn Chalitza and like Pidyon Peter Chamor, right, and Arifaso. These are a single parsha, which for some inexplicable reason was split up and placed in two different locations. But fundamentally, I think he's saying it's a single parsha, and as a single parsha, the only possible way to read it is that you need a gedil and you also need a pasil. One, it's not option of this or that, but both of them are necessary, and we get there by looking at these two midrashim, that you need four strings in the loose threads, and you need, right, the shamish to come, right, from the eight threads, and we get that by putting the two parashios, and only by putting the two parashios together, and therefore both of them are necessary.